Alan's also low-key daddy. Like, I know he's bad, but, like, hi. Hello and welcome to Love It or Weeb It, where we let you know if we love an anime enough to recommend it to everyone or if it's just for the worst of the weebs. I'm Annie, and I think that the celebrity who exudes the strongest furry energy is Lil Nas X. That's cheating, because he did tweet about wanting a fursuit, but I'm saying it anyways.
I was going to say, that doesn't seem like much of a stretch. I'm Jeff, and I think the celebrity who exudes the strongest furry energy is Lil Dicky, which I really only want to mention because I hate his guts with all my life force, and I despise him, and he's so smug, and I want to punch him in the face, and his entire Earth Day video last year was all about bragging about how many celebrities he had, but in a furry way. And we have a special guest this week. He's a retired comics blogger, comics editor, and temporarily retired Twitter sensation. Welcome to the show, David Brothers.
Hey, I'm David, and I think the celebrity who exudes the strongest furry energy is Britney Spears, because anyone who grew up after the 80s, I feel like is like at least 15% furry in general, between Bugs Bunny, Robin Hood, Bullwinkle, Space Jam.
Bullwinkle? You think Robin Hood and Bullwinkle are in the same category?
No, Bullwinkle has daddy energy.
Oh my god.
That's the moose, right?
Yeah, Canadian moose, I think.
What if you were wrong?
Yeah, we're going to upset all the Rocky and Bullwinkle stands.
Right.
Okay. Well, if you're new to the podcast, normally each week we watch the first three episodes of a new anime and cast our votes to Love It or Weeb It.
But today we're doing a full review of Trigger's latest show, BNA, since the full series recently dropped on Netflix, and we kind of assumed that we would like it enough to watch the whole thing. Before we get to BNA, though, I wanted to do our standard check-in on anime that we've been watching. Unfortunately for Annie and me, I'll let Annie speak for herself, but after watching all of Penguin Drum in like 3 days, I can never watch anime again. So, well, aside from the show that we watched for this podcast, but it's been hard to watch anything else. So the only thing I've been doing is reading Haikyuu, which is great. It's as good as the anime.
Yeah, I don't watch anything else other than what we watch for this anymore, because we've been doing full series reviews, so I don't have time.
I'm so exhausted. I can't wait to just go back to watching three episodes of a new show. Like, oh my god, it's gonna be so nice. So David, what have you been watching?
I apparently only watch violent TV shows. I'm literally digging Dorohedoro. Like, I wrapped that up last week, and the third part of Baki hit Netflix a couple of weeks ago, so I've been working my way through that. And those are just mostly about people getting cut up, turned into mushrooms, or punched really hard, but really good. So highly recommended.
What do you like best about Dorohedoro?
So I'm not into like wizards and fantasy stuff too much. Like I'm a much more of like a street level crime kind of guy in terms of like the fiction that I like. And Dorohedoro is about wizards who wear like Nike Dunks and use claw hammers as weapons instead of like magic staffs and whatnot. So it's way easier to get into. And the art is super beautiful too. Like, I mostly read the manga. I read more of the manga and then took a look at the show because of that. And I was like really pleased. It turned out pretty well.
Cool. Yeah. We were pretty positive about it in our episode, but I have not had time to get back to the other nine episodes.
I think no. Annie loved it and you weeped it.
I weeped it, but like,
yeah, Jeff.
I only weeped it in like the sense that I wouldn't recommend it to everyone, but I still personally enjoyed it, and I think it's really cool. But it's like not the kind of thing that I would, you know, stand on the hill and tell everyone to watch, because I think it has a kind of acquired taste.
Yeah, definitely.
Before we get into BNA, this is a Studio Trigger production. Studio Trigger is very well known in the anime community. I wanted to kind of quickly go around and check in on like what our history is with Trigger and what we briefly, like maybe a lightning round, think about each of their iconic shows. So, Kill la Kill.
Awesome.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I wanted to hate it super bad because of the premise and like the whole, well, I think we've already talked about this. It's gross concept wise, but execution was excellent.
Yeah. I think same thing for me, where the first two or three episodes had me worried. I was like, oh, is this going to be like this all the time? But then it turned into like this really stirring and exciting homage to the power of sisterhood. And I was like, yeah, all right. Keep it coming.
And everyone should be naked. That's like a plus, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of ignored it while it was airing because I was like, this seems like a gross titty show. I don't want to have anything to, don't want to do with at all. But then when I watched it, I was like, oh wow, it's actually like really excellent. And I know like as a guy, I shouldn't be one that judges, but it felt very empowering to women. Like it felt like, I think Trigger shows in general, usually they tend to not really have a message, tend to just be about like the power of like awesome pushing through thing, like just like full on like shonen energy kind of is at the heart of a lot of their shows. Mm-hmm. And but with Kill la Kill centering on women, it felt like it had a strong female empowerment message. But there are also like interviews where they're like, we didn't intend that at all. We just wanted to like draw them naked.
Yeah. But like
they did that in a way that put them in this position that was kind of subverting gender expectation. So like, yeah. I think it can be really empowering, but I think if people find it not empowering, that's totally valid too.
Yeah, I feel like it told me it was empowering to a point where I like believed it because it was so well done. But like when you think about it again, like it's not at all, because a lot of it was just she's like ashamed of her body, and then she like eventually is like, okay, I'm fine being naked. I'm like, yeah, it's because she has a banging bod. Like, of course she should be proud of it. Like, there's no shame. I don't understand. But did love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually made a note for BNA about trigger and empowerment. But I think you're right where it's, I don't know if it's like empowering for women so much as generally empowering, and the cast are women this time, if that distinction makes sense. Right. It's like, what if Luffy was a lady? It would feel like really good and positive, you know, but it's not quite the same as like women's liberation necessarily.
Yeah, totally. So I wrote down when supernatural battles become commonplace, because that technically was their second work as a studio. I watched it and I don't think it qualifies. I don't think there's anything noteworthy to discuss about it.
No, move on.
I've never even heard of it.
It's chuny trash that like they probably just did for a paycheck. Space Patrol Luluco, on the other hand.
5 stars. Perfect score.
Okay.
I love Space Patrol Luluco.
I've seen a couple eps and I liked it a lot, but I have to get back to it, which is sad because they're like 10 minutes long or something.
Yeah, I think you can like watch all of it in like under an hour.
Yeah. But
even so, I also didn't finish it, so...
It was so good. I hate you.
It was nice, but like it didn't hook me. Like it was, I think, like maybe too short to like, and there's also apparently lots of references to a lot of other shows.
Yeah.
I didn't get most of those references. I think it was like even referencing Little Witch Academia before.
Yes.
It was referencing the OVA before the series was made. So I didn't get that, those references and stuff. So
They literally went to the Luna Nova Academy Space Patrol Luluco.
Now that I've seen Little Witch Academia, I can place that. And it makes sense. Kind of like when I went to Koi Tower after seeing Jackie Chan Adventures as a kid, and I was like, oh.
That's enough out of you. We're moving on. Prison Ivor. Not good. Sorry, Trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I missed it.
I watched the whole thing, but I don't know why.
I heard enough bad things about it, and I watched the first episode, and it didn't like immediately hook me enough to put me over those warnings I heard, because it's... And this one is written by Mari Okada, who is like a really acclaimed anime writer and stuff. But like, I've heard it's like very like gender essential. It's like about this thing. Like the concept seems very like, you know, like radical to gender normativity. But I think I heard the message in the end is kind of upholding gender status quo stuff, and is like not great. So
yeah, it's just not good. It's kind of boring. It was pretty though.
That's fair. It's Trigger.
Everything they do is pretty and like well animated. There was no substance in Kiss Knife. I'm so sorry.
Little Witch Academia.
Great. Loved it.
Like it. Need to get back to it as well.
I finished all of it, but like, well, I've watched the TV series, not the OVAs, but it's like such a nice, pure, sweet series. But like, it was hard. It's hard for me to like feel more about it than just liking it a decent amount. Like, it didn't stir in me like this amazing energy like some other Trigger things. It was like,
wow,
oh, this is it's a very solid sweet thing. Okay, I could see it being great for like a younger audience.
Yeah, for sure. Like high speed, high pitch Trigger is kind of the mode I like the most. I think
I liked how it was, especially in contrast to Kill la Kill, like it centered female characters and was very not gross about it in any way. Like even when they had shots where they physically were upskirt of the characters, they went out of the way to like not show anything, no panty shots. So like, it's, which sounds like such a silly bar to have, like, oh man, when they show up their skirt, they don't actually show the panties. Wow, great job. But
no, but it's rare, and it's, thank God.
Yeah, it's a real feeling.
Darling the Franks, I heard, is such a shit show.
Let's just jump over this one. I don't want to talk about it. It makes me unhappy.
It's very ambitious, and I don't know if that ambition lands necessarily. But if you want to see like a variety of sexy poses, this is the anime for you.
Ugh, no. So what's the next one, Jeff?
SSS Gridman. I've heard really excellent things, but I need to get back to.
I loved it. It's like if you compress Evangelion, like the message of Eva, into 13 episodes. But it was Ultraman instead of giant robots, I guess.
That's really cool.
But no, it's great. It's like super nerdy homage anime, but they really stick like the emotional beats.
Yeah, I've heard it like connects in interesting ways to the original Ultraman, Gridman franchise.
Gridman and the Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad, which is what the SSSS stands for.
And I think there's something that they are working on in the future that sounds like a sequel. So what's it called? SSS Dinazenon,
I think. But yeah, just more tokusatsu. But it was cool because they drew all the monsters as if they were people in rubber suits. So it's like it's Trigger style, but really distinctive even amongst like the Trigger style.
So the latest Trigger thing, Promare.
I haven't seen it. I'm sorry.
Oh, how have you still not seen it?
I thought you bought it.
I was gonna, but then I was like, I don't spend money right now.
Annie,
I'm sorry.
We'll do a GoFundMe so that you can rent it and watch it. I'm gonna say I took two non-anime fans to see Promare and they loved it. So I think that like Promare is probably one of the best Trigger things so far, even though it's maybe not the deepest. But they really like knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it might be my favorite Trigger thing in general because I think it captured a lot of the energy that I loved about Kill la Kill.
Yeah.
But without any of that questionable grossness. And with it still being like, it's so gay. And like, I know that's not like their actual intention, but like, it's so gay. So like, I appreciate that angle of it. And it feels like the fandom and like fan base for it is so pure in their lust for these two boys to be together that like, I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I like that aspect. It's the only aspect I get to enjoy since I haven't seen the actual movie.
You're like that meme of like, yes, I'm a Promare stan. No, I haven't seen the movie.
Yes, exactly. That's me.
So in terms of Trigger Works, I have like a follow-up question. How do y'all feel about Ninja Slayer, if you've seen it?
I forgot to include that.
It's I think it's like a controversial Trigger Work. Like when Funimation put out the Blu-ray, one of the pull quotes is that it's one of the worst anime that Funimation's ever licensed.
Oh my God, that's harsh.
Wait, was it on the box?
Yeah, it's on the box. It's on the front cover.
That's great.
And the other one is like, LOL, no. But I think it's so unfunny that it loops back around into being incredibly funny.
You know, I tried watching it. When did it come out? Coming out in 2015.
Yeah.
I tried watching it at that point, I think I had only seen Kill la Kill. And I like, I don't know what I expect. I expected a more traditional show. Mm-hmm. So I was just like frustrated that it was, you know, like intentionally bad in so many ways. But I'm curious if I went back to it now and like went in with the proper framing, I think I would enjoy it.
It's dripping in so many layers of irony.
I just looked, Googled it. And then the articles that came up was the only thing I enjoyed about Ninja Slayer was the art. And Ninja Slayer, Studio Trigger's biggest disappointment. Oh, ouch, people. This is hurtful.
Streaming on Funimation, totally worth it.
Yeah, I guess.
There's an episode of the Crunchycast, which was Crunchyroll's, I don't know how long it ran for, maybe like 2 years or so, Crunchyroll's anime podcast that for most of it was hosted by a former guest of our show, Evan Minto. And there's an episode where they like, I don't know if it's a joke or real, where they interview one of the creators behind Ninja Slayer. I don't know if it was just a gag or if they actually
amazing
were talking to this person whose name is Ninja with an at in their name, but...
So the thing about Ninja Slayer is that the official story is it's based on history discovered by these two American guys about the true history of ninjas. It's a Japanese translation of that, but all of that is fake. So it's just two Japanese dudes in a room coming up with really dumb ninja things. And somehow they made 16 novels out of this.
Wow.
Wow, I hate that. It's just...
Oh yeah, but yeah, so getting back to BNA, what is kind of exciting about BNA is that I was confused. For me, like, I've been a fan of Trigger, but I haven't really dug deep enough to like understand the different creative forces really involved in Trigger. So like, I've just been like, Trigger is a monolith. The Trigger, if it's a Trigger show, it's worth watching. But apparently there's really been kind of a couple of different key talents at Trigger that have been worth watching. Like, so Yo-Yo Shinari was the series director and concept creator for Little Witch Academia. And they are the series director for BNA. And also one of the other most notable people in the company is Hiroyuki Yamaishi, who was the director for Gurren Lagann, Kill la Kill, Luluko, Promare, did storyboards for Fully Cooley, and they did storyboards for episodes of BNA. And consistently what I heard is like the combination of Yo-Yo Shinari and Hiroyuki Yamaishi is exciting enough to be interested in the show, because I think those are kind of like two different parallel tracks in Trigger that didn't really overlap before. And also on the same kind of track as Yamaishi, the series composition for BNA is basically like the lead writer is Kazuki Nakashima, who did series composition for Gurren Lagann, Kill la Kill, and Promare. So it's like this kind of fun, upbeat, pure-ish animation style of Little Witch Academia with the writing energy of Promare, Kill la Kill, and the exciting direction of, in a couple episodes, from Maishi. So I think that's kind of what got people pumped for the show. So, say, before we get into our impressions, David, what this is your job as the guest? I give you the hardest task. What's BNA actually about?
So I watched only half of one episode, so I'm just going to wing it. it's set in a world where there are humans and beastmen are essentially animal people, the usual anthropomorphic type of people. And the series follows Michiru, who is a normal human who turns into a beastman, and it's sort of like her trials and travails that she learns to navigate this new space, and then also like learns to accept her new identity, and then also like trying to find friends while all this is going on in her life. There's, you know, like a bunch of evil overlords in the city, like boss type characters. There's a lot of like really cute, like trigger touches, like lots of families, lots of eating and that kind of thing. But mostly the story is about Anima City and kind of it hitting this big turning point culturally and in other ways.
So Annie, what's your reaction? What do you think about the show?
I love the show. Everything from the opening to the ending was excellent for me. I loved our main character. I kind of loved the vague, I guess not antagonist, but like the through line through it was interesting enough for me to like keep watching each episode, and I didn't feel burdened by like having to watch all 12 episodes in a week. I was actually like, I didn't notice I had watched like the first four until I was like, oh, I got through four episodes, good job me. Like, it was just like a really fun watch from start to finish, and had some of, I don't want to say refreshing, but maybe that is the right word, some like refreshing episodes. I don't know, it just like felt good to watch, even though like there is like some fighting and cool stuff happening. It's still just, I don't know, pleasant. I had a good time.
I also really liked it. I don't know if I loved it like Annie loved it, but I thought it was really sweet, and I like, wow. I appreciated the it's not about the end of the world, it's just about kind of people trying to live their lives as best they can, and other people who are like, don't do that. And those are like the kind of the stakes that I'm able to process at this point during, you know, these unprecedented times. But no, the animation was great. Like all the fight choreography stuff was really good. And the music was fantastic too. It was by Maba Nua, who did the music for Megalobox. Yeah, so just all around great package, like a ton of fun.
I think I'm on a kind of similar wavelength of David, where I liked it, but I wasn't like, I feel like in the end, I'm like, oh, that was a nice, fun, bite-sized trigger snack. Kind of like it was a good meal, but it wasn't like, oh man, I'm full. Like, I feel like even after watching Promare, I'm like, oh boy, that was a ride. I need to take a break. I need to calm down. Or like,
it was exhausting.
Yeah. But it's not just because of the energy. I think it's just like, it did take me a little bit to, like after episode one, I was kind of like, okay, I'm not fully sold yet. Like, I wasn't like, I need to find out what happens next. I need to know. I was kind of like, okay. I think it took me a while for me to really vibe with Michiru. Like, I like her, but her stance of like proudly not being a beastman was hard to connect with for a while. Like, I was like, she wants to go to the city where she can coexist with the beastman, but then keeps at every turn being like, but I'm not a beastman. And I'm like, okay, you don't need to be so elitist about it. Like, I really appreciated the animation was nice. It just felt very like fun, cartoonish, which I think Trigger excels at. And I think it had a lot of the structure of the show reminded me of Kill la Kill, which now seeing that it's the same series composition, the same main scriptwriter, makes sense, because it felt, especially in the early episodes, it was like, oh, this episode is the blank episode where it's going to be this like standalone story that kind of fleshes out the world and teaches you more about Michiru, but it's like a story told within one episode. And this next episode is going to be another one. This next episode is going to be another one. Which reminded me a lot of the Kill la Kill energy, and especially the baseball episode is so fantastic, and I think is the best example of like one-off exciting fun.
Yeah, I love the baseball episode. It was so good.
That's one of my favorite traditions in anime is the baseball episode.
I'm glad you represent that opinion. Wait, Annie, what's your opinion about baseball episodes?
Sometimes they're boring because I don't like baseball, but this one was fun, and it was cute and had a fun, like, little, I feel like not growth moment, but like connecting to the community moment for Michiru that was like necessary finally. So it was like, it helped drive like the story forward while also being like a one-off fun thing.
Yeah. I usually hate baseball episodes because, yeah, I don't connect to baseball at all. And one of my first exposures to baseball episodes was Samurai Champloo. And I just don't like Samurai Champloo. So like maybe I should watch it again as an adult, but like I especially do not like the baseball episode. I was like, I don't know. So like that's the kind of impression I have of baseball episodes now. But this episode was amazing. This one was like so had so much energy, so much fun, antics and animation. And this is one of that episode was direct one of the ones directed by Imaishi of Kill la Kill fame.
That's funny, because I feel like baseball episodes are usually the best ones aren't really about baseball. They're about like using your powers to take advantage of the system, whether it's Michiru like transforming or in Champloo when like everything just goes completely wild, basically for no reason. Like it's a chance to like break the characters out of the box by putting them into a box that we kind of recognize. But like the baseball is almost not the point so much as the hijinks. Like Dorohedoro did a baseball episode that I thought was great.
Oh, I'm curious about that.
Yeah. And also, they're kind of all the same episode, I feel.
Like, it follows the same narrative structure.
Yeah, it's like, oh, now this is, like, introducing you to the community, or the character's making a connection to the community, or this is, like, a metaphor for their struggles in a broader sense. Like, they're going to try really hard here because they believe in trying really hard in real life, or something like that.
That checks out.
Yeah.
Another baseball episode that I love, but I kind of am hazing on the details now because it's been a couple of years, but just the entire premise of it. There's in Gundam Build Fighters, a baseball episode where like, okay, it's one thing to have Gundams playing baseball, but it's like, it's Gunpla playing baseball. So like, it's even more absurd. Like,
that's awesome because there's a Super Nintendo game that's Gundam Dodgeball. And I feel, yeah. And it's like the River City Ransom style graphics. So it's all like the chibi Gundams. And again, it feels really like incongruous, but that sort of makes it fun that you can see like Welthal or somebody or whoever, you know, playing dodgeball.
Oh, I do want to mention there's an interview on OdaQuest with the apparently like the noun form of series composition. Like I've seen people say series composer, but that just sounds wrong to me because then it's like it sounds music. Like a music thing. But so there's an interview with the head writer of BNA, Kazuki Nakashima, and it's about lots of different things, but one of the points I thought was really interesting, they talk about basically the like how the structure was to give episodes to different writers to let them see what they did with it. And they like early in the process brought up the idea of doing a baseball episode and almost rejected it. But the writer of that episode, Kimiko Ueno, was like insistent on it. And so they conceded to her and put it in, and then it's like the best part of the show. So I think that's a great story.
Yeah, it's a way for animators, like I think it's such a tradition at this point, or at least like a trope, if not a tradition, that animators can use it to really show off and do weird things. Like even just the way that I think Michiru was pitching was really cool and like visually exciting in a way that real life baseball absolutely is not. Like I hate baseball in real life. Yes. I should mention, like it sucks, I'm sorry. But animated baseball, all in. Yeah, it's like that sports anime, sports manga energy.
On the note of baseball, like I really appreciated that Michiru also plays basketball. Yeah. It's just like a cool detail to her character.
Yeah, we didn't get to see a lot of that. I was sad. I was hoping there would be like a basketball arc.
Yeah, that would have made my day.
I loved everything about that. And like her thing was she's like, yeah, I feel like I'm getting rusty. And she's just practicing all the time. And there's somehow a court on the roof of the place she's living at and the city she just got in. And I loved that. It was weird.
Yeah, those kind of details, I think Trigger as a whole excels at. Kind of making characters feel real because they have like things they care about beyond, you know, the plot or saving the day. It's like how Mako Makanshoku is one of the best characters in Kill la Kill, and she's like all id. She's like all desire, basically. Like she just wants to eat and sleep.
She
and have
is
fun.
The best character. Yeah.
I thought Jackie from the baseball episode, who keeps showing up later on, who I didn't realize was female until they start using pronouns later on, but apparently like she reminded me a lot of Mako, that comedic energy.
Yeah, but like a lot more dumb.
Wait, like you don't like it, or like they were a dumb character?
No, like they were just like dumb. Like they weren't very smart. Jackie, like, I'm so
Goku,
sorry,
basically.
But yeah. Mako's not very smart either.
She's more capable. She can take care of herself better.
She's persistent.
Like, stood up to fight. She like had a bat with spikes on it at a certain point, didn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, the episode where she becomes like the gangster, or not gangster, but the like high school punk.
Yeah.
What's that stereotype?
Like
that
boss
was funny
of the fight
and
club.
Great.
Yeah.
Legendary episode. This baseball one in DNA, it also does a thing that's cool where like they're so poor in this anime. Like I mentioned, like she's never seen bread that has like it's not crusts.
Poor Jackie.
And that's such like a throwback. Like if you read Ashita no Joe, Champion Joe, it's the same kind of setting where it's like the slums look the same. It's all kind of post-war Tokyo, post-war Japan, but like flipped for a new setting. So now there's beastmen instead of, you know, like boxing children.
Yeah.
But they make such like a good joke out of it. Like they're so poor that it becomes funny because it's like cartoonishly poor.
Yeah. And they're, I mean, sometimes it's like a little painful, but when they're just like, yeah, water without garbage and it tastes so good. I'm like, this is, I'm sorry.
That hit a little bit close to home with like
a little too topical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Promare was the same way.
Oh, did you guys catch? I like thought it for a second, but I didn't really catch it. But there was a couple characters in the show, like just background characters that are like characters from other Trigger shows, but into Beastmen in BNA.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Oh, I missed that, but I saw other Easter eggs.
Like what?
The Little Witch Academia hat is part of the one she tries on.
Yeah.
Inferno Cop is in the first episode on a TV screen.
Yeah. We didn't even talk about Inferno Cop.
Because everyone knows it's the best.
That's true. It saved anime.
Okay, wait. Because to me, I kind of lump Ninja Slayer and Inferno Cop in a similar category in mind.
They're cousins.
That's no, Jeff. One's good.
You like Inferno Cop, but you hate Ninja Slayer?
Yes. I've never seen Ninja Slayer, but I've seen Inferno Cop and it's good. Okay.
Like Inferno Cop is like distilled water. Ninja Slayer is super high carbonation.
Oh my god. Okay, wait, can I bring up something about, I guess it's not a spoiler, but it's something I really liked about BNA. So as I like opposed to like other, I guess, furry bait shows and movies like Zootopia or Beastars, I really liked that the conflict here was not like carnivores and herbivores or predators and prey. Like that was not mentioned at all, I don't think.
I guess it's comparing to those two specifically, it's the only one of the three that actually has humans in it, though. So it's like there's a more obvious antagonizing force. Because in Zootopia and Beastars, it's like it's just within the quote unquote animal kingdom, I guess.
Yeah, but this like made it like, because there was enough conflict within the city itself that we could have had just like a whole show about like Anima City and like just things that are going on, like the underground or whatever, without the humans involved. It wouldn't have been the same story, but it's possible. And the fact that it wasn't predator and prey, and it was just like this guy's like an underground gang, or this like the baseball team has to win or something. It was, again, refreshing, I guess.
Yeah. No, refreshing.
It was just
totally
nice.
Works.
I'm tired of the predator prey thing or carnivore or herbivore thing. We've got it.
Yeah. I think by making it just about like normal stakes, you know, like all of it was really relatable. It wasn't so much like an existential crisis necessarily. I guess it kind of was for Michiru, but not for us as viewers.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of like, it's about this character in this world versus like trying to say something like absolute about the state of nature.
Yeah, it felt less like it was trying to be a metaphor for something else compared to the other two.
Yeah, and kind of building on what Jeff was saying earlier, like about it being empowering, I feel like this was almost the same kind of generic empowering as Kill la Kill, but this time it's about identity instead of like friendship.
And also friendship, though.
Yeah, so, I mean, friendship's always in the mix. It's just, you know, ingredient two this time.
Yeah, instead of the main thing.
Because it seems like people have a really bad time when they, like, kind of lose control of themselves in DNA. But the whole point, what they're trying to get to, is a point when they are so secure in themselves when that doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Like, without, like, spoiling the specifics of how that goes down. And I think that's another one of those just really relatable, kind of generic good ideas for anime, which is, like, how do you get to live and be your true self without self-destructing or letting something else destroy you?
This is getting very deep very quickly. I wasn't prepared.
Yeah, sorry. This is all I do all the time. It's a pandemic and I live alone.
I think, yeah, I have more comments about that I will put in the spoiler section. Because I think I agree with you for the most part. But then there are some like implications of this world and scenario that I find a little not great in where they go. So David, you mentioned the music earlier. I didn't notice the music. Aside from the opening ending, obviously.
Wow.
Can you describe like what aspects of the music and the rest of the show stood out to you?
I think the ending is probably the most striking part of the music for me. The way it's sung is like really good. And they also do the thing where they sing it in the show, which I love every time it happens in anything.
Me too.
even in live action, I'm like, yes, keep doing this. But mostly it just felt, the soundtrack's not as good as Megalobox, I think. It's less intense, less front and center, but it is like a good background for the action in Anima City. So it's like less memorable tunes and more like, oh, like this perfectly fits like the tone of this scene that I'm watching. But I think the ending especially kind of captures like that sort of wistful melancholy that kind of permeates the show in some ways, whether it's about friendship or being yourself or even, you know, like how to survive in the city. There's things like that I would feel.
I really like the animation during the ending sequence because it was like a different art style and it kind of like reinforced the, like the show was already very cartoony and that style was even more stylized cartoonish.
It was cute. Did you, it's not a spoiler, but in one of the episodes, a thing happens and then the ending was like all grayed out instead of colorful.
That was great.
I was like, ooh.
I love when the opening or endings change based on what's going on in the show. There was one show from the New World from, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago now, where they didn't have an opening. They just played the opening theme over like a cold open and they timed it so that the exciting part of the opening theme happened during an exciting part of the cold open. And it was so cool every time.
I love that. I love when when they were singing the song that's the ending in the show. That's just my fave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like it fit here because there's like, I don't want to like, there is a
is
plot
it a
point.
Spoiler?
It's kind of a spoiler. I would say like there is the plot point of a person who is a singer that becomes relevant. Have we talked about like what we like about Michiru as a main character?
No? We haven't, but I think for me, it's mostly the animation. Like, I feel like her whole design is really strong and charming. And then the way, like, they turn her design on its head as she goes through the different things she goes through in the series. Yeah, all that stuff, like, really makes me want to pay attention to what she's doing. And then she's, like, a solid person character-wise other than that.
I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to mention how... So we already mentioned that she mentioned this in the first episode, that she's a human who got turned into a beast man. And I think by episode 2 or 3, it's clear that she can kind of morph a little bit. Yeah. And watching that, that's like, that feels like one of those powers. It's like, it's there for the fun things you can do with animation. And yeah, there was like, it starts off pretty simple with like basically just Luffy-esque powers of stretching. And then it gets cooler and cooler as the series goes on.
Yeah.
It was like a good showcase of animation.
I don't think this is a spoiler either because it's in episode 2, but there's a point where she's using her powers to try to save the day, but she can't see what she's doing, so she's off target. But the day still ends up being saved because someone else pulls a lever. And it was so funny to me seeing like this really energetic, like end of the anime boss fight animation put to the service of this really dumb joke of like, she's trying her best and it's not quite good enough, but it's still going to work out.
It's like, that's a cool concept because it's like she put all its effort into the animation and it wasn't actually a thing that wasn't actually necessary in the end. Like it was just there for nothing.
And that's like the trigger excess. Like that's what they excel at, is showing you all this extremely extra stuff. Basically just to make you smile. I think that's why their stuff is so charming.
Yeah. So it's interesting he hasn't come up at all because I think the star of the show is Shiro Ogami.
Yeah, that's my daddy now. I love him.
Wow.
The second he started speaking, I was like, oh, sign me up to be a furry.
I guess this is kind of like tangential to his actual character. I think it's cool how the characters, like all the beastmen in the show, we haven't even mentioned, like can transform back and forth between human and beastmen. I think it's cool for the designs. We get to see like every character basically has 2 designs. But I feel like thematically, it's a little bit, not thematically, but the way it's plotted is a little weird. Like the way people have pride in being a human or a beastman is weird in a world where if you're a beastman, you can live your entire life in one form or the other. And I feel like that's never really fully addressed aside from like a couple comments that feel like they add rich texture to the world when, Michiru comments that like, even though she identifies as a human, she prefers to be in a beastman form because being in her human form feels like wearing high heels all the time.
Oh yeah. I like that line.
Like that's a cool detail, but it did feel weird that like these people who like strongly identify as beastmen stay in their human form most of the time. Or like, I think it was most jarring in the first episode when there's like this elaborate festival where all the beastmen are in their beast forms. And then like Michiru does something and comes back and is like, wait, why is everyone in a human form? And they're like, oh, because that would be too chaotic. We were in a human form most of the day. And it's like, but the city is, I thought the whole point of the city was that everyone can be here. And like the whole message is you can embrace your differences. But then it's like, no, not really. Don't actually embrace your differences. Like it's more attractive to the viewers if you're human most of the time. Like,
yeah, I felt like they tried to explain that away because it was like confusing. But I think they tried to explain that away with, it's not like really a spoiler, but she goes to a place and she, cause she can't transform back into a human. Like that was a whole problem in episode 1. And they're like, oh, when you're out in your beast form like that, it sends a signal that you're trying to fight. And oh, then like,
yeah. I kind of missed like, that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so like they were saying, oh, that was really bold of you to come here transformed. And then she was like, what? Like, I don't know the rules. My bad. And so I feel like that was them trying to like explain away why they're in their human form. Mm-hmm. But like, it makes sense. But I was also just like, well, if everyone was just in their beast form all the time, you wouldn't think that. But
is sure. there a difference between people who are in their beast form and human form, like personality wise?
I don't think so.
Are there any that are just like, are there any characters that are just constantly in their beast form? Aside from Michiru, kind of.
No.
Yeah, maybe it's, I don't know, this is like deep in the weeds. Maybe it's like a beast rivalry thing where, you know, like lions and hippos don't really hang out. But if they both look like people, they're like, okay, cool. Like we can be peaceful together right now. But it does have like a kind of a weird passing subtext. Like, oh, you could, you know, pass for a human. Why don't you? And it's like, well, because I'm really proud of being a beast man. It's like, well, yeah, but you're like a human right now. So that doesn't quite add up.
Right, right. Like I feel like the message it wants to tell us is that they are proud of their identity. Mm-hmm. But then their actions don't quite reflect that.
Yes, confusing message.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So I think we should, unless you have something to say about those other characters, like the mayor, the weasel.
Okay, just she's a small thing. The mink also loved her. I would die for her.
Yeah.
But wait, is it she's a microaggression to keep calling her a mink or to keep calling her a weasel?
I think so.
Yes, she's a mink. Don't get it twisted. She's the love of my life. I simp for her. I simp for Shiro. Those are my two
faves.
You
don't simp for Michiru?
No. She's a child.
Wow. The disgust in her voice.
How could she say such a thing?
Also, wait. She's a child, but like school does not exist in this universe, apparently. That's apparently a human construct. And in Beastman City, they never mention school as a thing that exists. Shouldn't she be going to school?
I think it's there.
Because animals do all their learning right after they're born, and then they're good.
True. That's why... Okay, wait, this is a spoiler. But small thing about the mayor. I could not tell when the mayor was in human form and not in human form.
Now the racism comes out.
I'm sorry. She looks very similar.
Speaking of racism, I forgot to mention it in the baseball, when we were talking about the baseball episode. The panda that is shaped like a dumpling or a steam bun.
I don't know.
Did not like that.
I didn't catch that.
You didn't catch that? I'll send you a screenshot. But it feels like a very anti-Chinese visual stereotype.
Well, maybe I'll agree with you. Maybe I won't.
So now we're going to get to our questions from Twitter. The first one came in from @DuckFaceDiaries, which is a World Trigger podcast. World Trigger is a very cool manga. So that seems like a worthwhile endeavor of a podcast. But anyway, they said... yes, Boku no Academia. What animals do you think Deku, Uraraka, Bakugo, and Ida should be?
Oh, snap.
I should have thought about this in advance. I didn't
yeah, me either. Well, Ida is literally the same voice actor as Shiro, so...
Oh, boy. I tripped and fell, and I woke up in...
The Sayu sidebar.
Sayu sidebar.
I'm sorry. I love him. I've brought him up several times. Yoshimasa Hoyosa. Or Hosoya, yes.
You don't even know his name.
Yoshimasa Hosoya. I said it from memory like a fool and I should have typed it. But yeah, he's Ida, so that's he should be Shiro. Done.
Do bugs count as animals?
Let's say no.
Oh.
I was going to say yes, but then I didn't see any in the show in my head, so.
Uraraka could be some kind of deer or high-jumping deer thing, whatever those are called, that live on mountains. Do y'all know what I'm talking about?
Wait, they live on mountains? Goats?
Caribou? What's a caribou?
What's a caribou?
Maybe it's goats, never mind.
Wait, anyway, how come...
I can't believe caribou.
Wait, when I type caribou and space, the like number one auto suggestion is caribou fursona, which like does not seem like it should be the number one thing. What is a caribou?
It's like a big deer.
It's like a big, like a big deer, like a mini moose. Take your pick of the comparison.
Yeah. I mean, like literally they're reindeer. Mm. But I think reindeer are way bigger than Rudolph makes it seem.
That Rudolph?
Scamp.
I can't think of what Deku would be.
He'd be a golden retriever that for some reason has black fur with green
That's
highlights.
That's cute. That's cute. I love that. Jeff, you didn't contribute to this question at all.
I'm not good with animals. Like,
you came up with caribou.
Sometimes I get tiger and lion confused. Like,
that's enough. We're gonna shut this down.
I would not be a good furry.
That's pretty bad. Oh, Bakugo. Did we not cover Bakugo?
No.
So if we could do bugs, I would say he would be that shrimp that's what is it, the bullet shrimp that can hit really hard?
Oh my god.
I don't know about that. Well, what about the murder hornets?
Those too.
Okay, that does sound on brand for him, being a murder hornet. But I also see, I feel like him and Deku are both like types of dogs, because one, they're childhood friends, and I don't know why they have to be the same, but but also, I don't know, I feel like, because Bakugo's got a lot of bark and sometimes a lot of bite, but mostly a lot of bark, and it's cute.
Wow. So maybe a tree.
Jeff, I swear to god, I should have just stayed hung up.
Anything else for that? Should I move on?
We're bad at answers.
We also got a question from Calopsia underscore AE. First off, they asked about what we thought about other trigger shows. I think we've covered that thoroughly. So the next question, how do you feel about Nazuna? So I mainly kept our discussion on Nazuna for a spoiler section. Do you have any like non-spoilery thoughts?
I hate influencers, but I kind of came around on her by the end.
Okay. I love Nazuna. She made me a little mad at one point. But that was actually a thing I really enjoyed about the show, was Nazuna and Michiru's relationship. Mm-hmm. And like how it did get strained, but not for a single second did Michiru or Nazuna like hate each other. Mm. Like they were fighting, but like they didn't hate each other.
I thought it was really, yeah, like their relationship dynamic was really interesting. And like it felt like it both played through like an obvious arc, but in ways that subverted my expectation, kind of. Like I expected things to be more bombastic than they just felt more real than I expected.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you fight with your best friend, but, and like, you're mad and you're gonna go sulk about it, but the next day you're just like, I would literally die for you. Like,
we talked about the baseball episode. So their fourth question was, do you want a season two?
Hell yeah. Sign me up. What's it gonna be about? I don't know, but here I am.
I'm gonna say no, because I feel like it ended on a good point. Like, I was satisfied by the end, and I wouldn't want to cheapen that with season two. Hmm.
But what if it's good?
What if it's not?
Listen, I'm not gonna be mad if there's no season two, but if we just, if there was 12 more episodes of Shiro just like saying words, I would be in.
Like, I keep thinking of Gatchaman Crowds, which I loved, and then they did a season two, which was good, but it wasn't anywhere near as good as the first season.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Jeff?
I would like season two. I feel like it, the obvious comparison that comes to mind is like Kill la Kill felt like it like told an entire story and like ended at a point where it's like, I feel like if they were to do more, it would have to be a completely different show. Whereas this feels like they set up the world and it had a narrative arc that concluded, but they set up a world that has so much more to explore. So like, I feel like they could explore a lot more. And there could be lots more like things in the city that are worth telling.
Would you want to see the same cast or a different cast?
I think I'd be interested in like the same cast interacting with more characters.
Okay.
But that would be cool to like see a completely different cast and like, you know, like a different side of the world. No.
Well, Shiro and...
We do need Shiro.
Yeah.
What like, if how, he has a twin brother that? Named Kuro?
No, he is the crow.
Yeah, he had the crow's name Kuro.
Oh, right. Crap.
She already made the joke. All right, so I think that's all we have for our non-spoiler thoughts. Go watch the show. It's good. It's available subbed and dubbed on Netflix. The whole season is out. It's 12 episodes. It's a solid experience. I think we're varying degrees of loving it versus liking or whatever, but I think we all recommend it. So
totally worth the time. I watched the dub. I don't know if you two did the sub or the dub, but I was pretty pleased with that too.
I mainly watch the sub because this is the nitpick or frustration I have with Netflix and a lot of companies that make that have anime dubs available, that I prefer to watch things. I always prefer to have closed captions on. I guess I got that habit from watching anime, but like, so even when I'm watching things in English, I like to have English with closed captions on. And a lot of things where you have an option between dub and sub, like the platform will either, if you choose dub, you can't have any subtitles. Or what Netflix does, if you put on English and English subtitles, then it's the dub script and the subtitle script and they don't line up. Yeah. So I'm just like, ugh. I think some Netflix shows, they actually like program things so that it's when you change the audio track, it changes the closed captioning script. So it lines up, but at least this one didn't do that. So I kind of gave up on watching the dub because I wanted it to line up. So I just switched the Japanese track. Annie, I assume you watch sub because you say you're trash.
Yeah.
Oh, that's and right. The point where they sing the song is in Japanese, which was kind of cool in the dub. I meant to look back and see if they kept the original Japanese voice actress or if they got the new voice actress to do it. But either way, it sounded great.
Wait, like they're speaking English and they transition to Japanese?
Like they're having a conversation in English. And then when they're like, let's sing the song, like they sing the song with the Japanese lyrics.
All right. So we're doing spoilers now, right? Because that's kind of a spoiler. Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah. All right. Great. Now I've lost all thoughts
What do you think about Boris Johnson?
Ew, I hated that guy. That was okay. So again, bringing it back to my fave girls, or I guess fave friendship, Michiru and Nazuna, their like little fights that they were having. I guess they were big fights, but I loved that they like bring up points to each other of like faults they're making, and like Michiru was like, hey, by the way, like that Boris guy's creepy. She's like, he's not creepy. And then later on that night, she's like, get out of my room, you're creepy, Boris. Like, I was like, wow, true best friends. They're just like, no, you're wrong. Anyways, later on admits they're right. Like, It was so cute.
That felt so real, especially because like it felt like leading up to that, there were a lot of moments where it was like the like cartoonish, obvious villain strategy was right there on the table. But then they were just like surprisingly upfront about things. Or like as soon as I think I first noticed it when like Michiru sees Nazuna and she's acting as the cult leader, the cult founder, which by the way, I want to talk about separately, but she's acting as a cult founder. And I thought Nazuna would pretend, you know, like pretend to be a different identity or something, or be like mysterious and then later reveal. But no, she's like, oh, hi. Yeah, it's me, Nazuna. I was like, oh, okay. Or like people keep like telling their like Alan at one point, like is just like immediately upfront with things. And I was like, oh, okay. It turns out he had more, you know, secrets that he was hiding. But like up until the last couple episodes, it felt like everyone was just saying everything. And I was like, oh, this is refreshing. But yeah, like there's a point where she rejects the idea that Boris is creepy. And I was like, oh, that's because she's been totally brainwashed, or like she's on board with him, or like there's some evil thing up her sleeve. But instead it was like, no, because she likes that affection of being told that she's special. And then eventually she realized that it is really creepy and she kicks him out. But
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool parallel to how sometimes you can't see that something's creepy until your friend is like, hey, what is going on here? You know, like yeah. You need that outside voice to be like, listen, like, I know you're having a good time, but have you really thought about this? Hanging out with some dude all the time.
Yeah. And okay, there was this one moment that really upset me. And I was kind of just like, girl, what is going on? I guess they explained it that Nazuna was like experimented on. She was like taken away, experimented on. And then this guy saved her. So she felt like indebted to him or whatever. But then like that moment where like they're like, in front of a mirror and he like grabs her face and tells her she's like pretty and tells her to stay that way forever. I was like, this is freaking weird. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know how she's okay with that.
Yeah. I was like, how do you not see that this is gross and you need to go?
I mean, she's an influencer and influencers need that kind of encouragement. They thrive on that energy.
Yeah. Maybe it's like that type A coaching thing where you're just a dick to people and they're like, oh, you're right, because you're being mean.
Why was he so many snakes?
Why not?
Why wasn't he just one snake? Why was he a lot of snakes?
My favorite Godzilla monster is King Ghidorah, so I was very into the three-headed thing at the end.
That made less sense. Alan? The snakes, I'm like, okay, this isn't like an important plot detail. It's like, whatever, just more snakes looks cooler. But yeah, when Alan became three heads, I was like, huh? Why is he three heads now?
Yeah, it just looks
okay,
cool.
Alan... Alan's also low-key daddy. Like, I know he's bad, but like, hi.
He's bad, but not bad for me.
Yeah, like he was like very powerful and wealthy and like had a nice voice. And I was like, all right. He had a suspicious voice. Like you could tell.
It sounds like profiling.
Yeah, Annie, tell us more about.
Yeah, well, sometimes you're right.
Oh, wow. But for Michiru and Nazuna's friendship, I also like that Michiru would like run after her to rescue her from things. Like when she gets kidnapped to go be experimented on, or so Michiru thinks, and they yank her into the van. There's like no question that she's going to go after her friend, even with her differences.
Yeah, she's like, I know I was just fighting with you, but I am going to sneak into this hospital and I'm going to destroy some shit.
Yeah. And the machine that Nazuna was in that she found her in is actually the same one from Akira that Tetsuo was being tested in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day.
Hopefully.
I forgot to bring it up in this point. It's kind of odd to talk about in spoilers, but I guess I eventually got over and just accepted it as part of the world, but like, I found Michiru's face weird because she's supposed
to be
Tanuki.
What's wrong with you?
No, but like, okay, that sounds wrong the way I said it. The way she has a, let me look up a picture of a Tanuki to understand the full reference. But like, Tanuki,
she was cute.
Wait, Tanukis are real?
Are you joking right now?
I thought they were a mythological.
It's
Jeff.
There's an.
I
animal.
Need you to take some steps back. I need you to take it back and delete that from me having to hear you.
I thought they were a mythological thing.
They're a mythological version of a real animal.
I'm just gonna scream.
Anyway, so Tanuki have like a like those like the. Black shadow around their eyes. And Michiru has that, like, it's like they've combined her actual black fur around her eyes and her shadow interface. And so like when she would move around, like a shadow would move. But then I was like, so is this permanently part of her face or is it the shadow? And I kept thinking about it too much early on, but you know.
She's just a tanuki.
But like,
Which at first I thought the, because you know, like there's the thing that like tanukis can transform shape and that's like a thing.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, that's like a thing about
tanukis. I thought tanukis. That was their whole deal.
Like, yeah, they can like change shape and like trick humans and it's really a good time. But so I thought that was part of the story with Michiru and how she could transform her body. And I was like, oh, it's because she's a tanuki. That's why nobody else in this world can. I was wrong, but like I thought that's what it was. It's still not explained fully, I guess, but...
Well, yeah, I thought it was just whatever people who they experimented on could transform.
Yeah, but, like, why?
Why not?
That's all the logic you need.
Fine, I guess, but I really... I was sad when I was wrong about the tanuki thing. I thought it was... Because she was also trying to be like, I'm a raccoon. And I was like, girl, a tanuki is way cuter.
But I think it's like an intentional misdirect. Like you're wrong because they wanted you to be wrong.
Oh, thanks a lot, Trigger. Trying to make me look like a fool.
The cult in the series, my headspace, I'm kind of just in a cult mood because I read a lot about the history of the real life cult that was behind the Tokyo Subway sarin gas attack that was relevant to our last week's episode of Hanging Drum.
We can get it. You can read.
I read a book. And now I'm going to talk about it for hours. But no, it's so like this cult, I don't think was that similar to the real life Helm cult. But I think it's, I think any modern anime made after 1995 that has cults in it is going to be at least somewhat informed by that cult because it had such a big impact on Japanese culture. But also the way that they talk about how Nazuna and Boris joined, like they're referring to Nazuna as the founder of the cult. And then they are just like, oh yeah, we found this cult. And then he became the founder. And I'm like, so like, this whole thing is like bullshit, right? Like the whole thing is just, like on its face. It's the like extremity of calling someone a founder who wasn't even there until they were already had like thousands of members or hundreds of members. Like there have to be records of that. Like there have to be people around who knew that they were a religion before she came around. And they still were just like, she's the founder.
Is it that she's like the focal point of the religion? So the implication is that she was secretly there all along? Or like they were moving in support of her spirit or something?
That's what I thought. Is that they thought that she was the person or the entity that had been watching over them the whole time. And they're like, oh, you've returned to the church.
Right.
And she's like, yeah.
Yes.
I just find it so kind of fascinating how kind of absurd the bald-faced lies are that can still, not hypnotize, but like keep people captivated. Like the founder of the, who I think he was actually a founder of the Elm cult that perpetrated the subway sarin gas attack. He like made claims to have been Jesus reincarnated and like all these absurd claims and stuff. And, you know, people, you know, like, he was the enlightened one who like transcended bodily desires, but also slept with like, had like 13 wives and stuff. And it's like, what, how do you reconcile these things? But whatever.
That's how you transcend culture desires is having 13 wives.
Right.
But I think that's part of the mystique is like, there's something magical and attractive about whatever the like the founder or central figure is in the cult to the point where you want to believe that stuff about them because it like validates something within you or it makes something about your world make sense or something like that. And especially in a case where it's like you have a cult with a prophecy and then you kind of produce the prophecy, like you create your messiah, that's like total brainwashing to me. You know, it's like, oh look, I was right all along through this very specific sequence of events that I orchestrated without anyone knowing.
On the note of it being a real thing, I thought that it was at the point where they're about to reveal that Ogami is the Silver Wolf. I was kind of like, well, yeah, because clearly the Silver Wolf is going to be a character and there are only like four or five characters and there's only one wolf. So,
okay, they also said it basically in the first episode when he's like, Beastmen have been waiting 1,000 years. I'm crying. And then they're just like, oh, yeah, the Silver Wolf, like for 1,000 years. I was like, okay.
Hint, hint, hint.
Yeah, I think maybe if it had been like, you know, like he was secretly, or like if he was going around calling himself a fox and they're like, oh, he's secretly a wolf or something like that. Like any kind of, but it's like, okay, there's one wolf character. There's a Silver Wolf. There's a wolf character with white hair. I wonder who it could be.
Yeah.
Loved him.
Yeah, it doesn't take away from the fact that he's great.
His outfit, so good. The collar when he's a human, woo!
I was going to ask about the collar, actually, but I figured it was too horny for the podcast.
No.
Wait, what about the collar?
His hat.
Is he the only one that wears a collar in the entire series?
It looked like it. That's all I could tell. Well, okay, it had a point. It had a point. And the point was it, like, sealed away his, like, Silver Wolf powers. And then he ripped it off during that big fight. And he's like, I have no choice.
I was really confused what you were talking about. I thought you were talking about, like, his the popped collar of his jacket. You mean actually,
like... Like the sex collar that he wears to keep his powers under control.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that is a very horny detail. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Now that I look at
you
it,
you didn't
like,
notice that episode
no,
one? That was a huge selling point for me. I was like, oof, the furry agenda's coming for me, strong.
Yeah, I feel like it's such a, not a line in the sand. It's like a flag, like a billboard, like, hey, this is what you want. It's right here, kind of a thing.
Like furries, come get your juice.
Yeah. Especially like when he takes it off to get stronger. It's like, what are you people saying right now? Goodness gracious. But the point where he says the 1,000 years and he's crying at that party at the beginning, I really appreciated the thing in the last episode where Michiru brings that up again as a way of like validating who he is as a person. When they're having that conversation.
Is there fireworks?
I didn't think y'all could hear that.
Is that a yours, David?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, it's lit over there.
Can you still
hear it?
Happy
7th of July. No, it's
not anymore.
Now.
I think they calm down.
Okay. But I was saying I like the part in the last episode during the credits conversation that Michiru and Shiro have where she's like, you were at that party in your wolf form and crying. Like, this is validation for you in a way. Like, you should be happy. You should be proud of who you are. I thought that was a nice way to bring everything like kind of in a nice, neat circle. That was like, there was this whole story arc that happened outside of the main plot. And it was all like emotions being processed in the background and the main character having like really high emotional intelligence.
Mm.
Yeah.
In contrast to her emotional intelligence, I thought it felt very realistic how both Michiru and Nazuna are duped by the idea that, oh, if we just tell the Beastmen that we're, that the leader of the cult is a human, they'll be happy about it. I'm like, okay, these are children. They don't understand how the world works. And like, as soon as an adult hears it, they're like, hell no.
But like, didn't you just hear the thing that causes the syndrome is a shock? Like, how dumb do you have to be?
And the, like, building on the friendship again, too. When Michiru's just like, please don't admit that you're a human in front of all these beastmen. And Nazuna just immediately trusts her and like pivots to not doing anything she was going to do. Like, really good writing to me. Like, that was really like heartwarming and touching.
Yeah. Cause like they had all this conflict and then she's just like, whatever, I'll trust her.
And she's like, you have to tell me why after this, but like, you're a homie. I trust you.
Yeah. It got messed up like literally 10 seconds later anyways, but it was a nice moment for their friendship.
Right. Right. Like, plot wise, they could have just had her ignore it, but instead they made her have a nice moment and they had to introduce something else course-correcting. Yeah. So that was nice. The entire premise. So like, for a while when Alan's describing how they like the problem that's gonna happen, like the whole what do they call it? That it's the name of the village or the ancient city or village that was destroyed. The name of the syndrome?
Nirvasil.
Yeah, Nirvasil.
Something like that.
Syndrome.
Sounds like a medication.
Yeah.
But like the way he describes it, it's like, it seems so duplicitous when he's explaining it, because at that point we've only seen it happen to people, to beastmen that he actually, you know, like he physically tampered with them and then they exhibited it. So at that point when he's explaining it being a thing that can happen naturally based on stress and stuff, I was kind of like, is he just gaslighting everyone? And it turned out he was lying about some things, but that it was a natural thing that could happen. And I don't love that. I kind of was hoping that what the message was going to say was that actually, like, it's entirely a manufactured fear, and that, like, because so what ends up being true is that, like, if beastmen are triggered sufficiently, then they will go into this rage. But they also explain that, like, they are more on edge in the city than normally because they're just around other types of animals more. So that's like a subconscious background stress level that heightens them.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, like, so, like, the message that sends as a concept to, like, formalize into the rules of the world to be very, I don't know, like, unsettlingly, like, and we're talking about, like, species of beastmen, so it's not like a direct, you know, racism metaphor, but like, just feels so, like, the fact that there's like physical signs of, like, there's physical harm in this melting pot because they're a melting pot felt like a weird thing to codify into the world. I don't know. Gave me weird vibes.
Are they doing it because, do you think, like, they're mapping it onto humans, or is it more an animal kingdom kind of thing, like circle of life?
I think they mean it as like a like, we're just talking about animals, And if you were to put all these animals in one city, they would, this would be a plausible thing to happen with them. But I feel like when everything else is so grounded in human interactions, it gave me this weird vibe of like, here's a city where everyone's happy. And like, you can all, like, the entire founding principle of the city is a city where all beastmen are welcome. And then to turn around and be like, oh, but actually, if you put that in practice, they're actually all risks to each other. And I don't know, like, I at least appreciate by the end of, like, because it seemed like there was a point where the mayor was on board with disbanding the whole city. At least I appreciate that they turned that around. Like, you know, the city is a good thing to exist. I appreciate that they reinforced that message by the end of it, but it's still, I don't love the other implications. Any rebirth season?
Well, I was going to say, I was hoping that the like solution to this syndrome the cause of this syndrome wasn't that they were all close together. It was that they were like hiding, like suppressing their true selves. And like, I thought that was kind of the message of the whole show. So I was like kind of hoping they were going to be like, oh, it's because we're all human all the time and mixing together without revealing who we really are. So it's like stressing out our instincts or something.
That makes sense. That would make sense.
Yeah. So I was kind of hoping they were going to do that, but then they just like didn't. And I was like, oh, okay, sure.
That's a weird feeling to be like, oh, this would be a powerful message. They're so close to it and they didn't do that message. And then you're like,
they didn't do it. Yeah. Like, oh, I projected too much onto this, I guess, that I thought it was real good writing. But I guess it's just me. But I didn't know, like, what was their solution at the end? Just to, like, drench everyone in each other's blood and then become immune?
Pretty much.
Like, that was what they did? So everyone who comes has to get a vaccine?
Yeah, that's relatable, right?
Not a good solution.
Yeah, like, it has no, it, like, fits in the plot that's been established in a world, but it has no, like, message to it. And instead, the message that we're left with is, yeah, if you don't get someone's blood, then we're all kind of a risk to each other if we interact from different people of different identities interact.
Yeah. Well, because, okay, my ending that I, my fan fiction, my AU, would have worked really well with that end thing with Shiro when she was like, you should be in the form that you're most comfortable with and you're most happy with, like who you're proud of. Like, you shouldn't be a human all the time. Like, my thing would have fit real well with that. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Put me in charge. Trigger, where you at?
Let's call up Trigger, ask him to modify the episodes.
Trigger, tweet at me at any other name. I'm waiting.
I think I have a more sympathetic take on that than you two. I think I'm closer to Annie than to Jeff in that it's sort of about like being happy in who you are. But I think there's like a real undercurrent of the show is that like moving to the city was good for Beastmen, but it also really screwed up their lives and their kind of natural, like the natural order of things. Like there was the there was the bird who can't migrate. There was like the mermaid who can't go into water. Things like this, where it's like there's a way that all these, you know, people, all these Beastmen can be comfortable and live their lives the way they want, but because they've been squashed into this city, like they're pulled out of what comes naturally. So they kind of can't find their true face until, you know, they have an example like Michiru, who's just like, yeah, just be yourself and also take this blood.
Yeah. I also, okay, so not to cross universes, but in Beastars, they had this nice thing. I don't know if it was that nice, but there was those moments where like Legoshi's like, oh, it's time for, it's like species day or whatever. And everyone would go to their own species, like environments catered to them. Like he's a wolf. So he would go to like a room that was like lit by the moon and like chill in there. And like other animals would go to like kind of their own habitat kind of room. And I was wondering if something like that was going to play into that. Cause like, yeah, they're all ripped out of their habitats and put in this one city. Of course it's stressful. I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate humans. Like, as much as I was like, oh, we didn't need them. No, I did hate them. They are the bad people. But...
Well, I feel like what would be more fitting would be, like, if the city... Like you're saying about the species day, like, if it were just more... If the city was more different than a human city. You know, like, if it had, you know, like, fields in the middle of the city for certain animals to, you know, I don't know, do animal things in. Or, like, or just, like, had the things that made it unique and made it more habitable in a way that like blended their natural environments with the city. Mm-hmm. I would find that interesting. Yeah, but I guess same. These are all like, I guess these are all things that a season two could go to. So I feel like there are enough in the world they set up. There are enough like potential conflicts and potential directions that like feel like it would make more sense for the world to head in. Cause even this entire city, the entire concept of Anima City, it's only been around for 10 years in the world. So like it would make sense for it to like not maybe the first iteration, not be the best ideas or like, take some time to figure out something that actually works long term.
Yeah. I also, what was I going to say? Never mind.
This is unrelated.
No, I thought of it again.
Oh, okay, go.
Shut up. I was disappointed that there was like the crew of like female animals that were talking about, oh, it's so hard to like make it in this world as like a female like animal. And I was like, hold on a second. because we've seen there's lions in the city, and we all know in the real animal kingdom that the female lions are the ones in charge. Like, they do all the good shit. And so I was like, so I don't know how this is really going to play into this. But then they didn't explore it at all. So they couldn't even, like, I didn't have anything to argue with because they didn't give us anything.
Look, humans brought patriarchy to the animal kingdom.
Yeah, like, what's up with that?
I did like that most of the, like, there weren't any sexy animals in, like, the, hang on, let me rephrase.
I mean, we had a Shiro.
Like, the women animals, the female animals weren't, like, sexy human versions of, like,
oh, yeah.
A boar or a deer or something. They were just like, no, like, I'm a giant boar. Like, this is what I do.
Yeah, they weren't sexualized in the typical anime gross, you know, made for a heteronormative, made for a heteronormative male audience kind of way.
That was also refreshing, I think.
Yeah, this wasn't like set in academy where all the men are all like fully animals and all like the girls are just little ears and tails. And that's the only part of the animal they are. Damn. I think this is my favorite, like, animal-centric, like, anime.
Wait, like, over Beastars?
I think over Beastars, just because Beastars, while good, I just... And I did enjoy the animation in Beastars. It was good. I just prefer Trigger style more, so it was more fun for me to watch. So, like, the story was, like, refreshing and fun, and it just, like, it looked good. Like, a lot of the backgrounds, I wanted to just, like, pause, and I'm like, this could be my desktop background because it's, like, so pretty and I want to see this every day. But Beastars, I mean, it was beautiful, but it's not my favorite art style.
Yeah, that's fair. Wait, can we talk about Subway is Dogway, Burger King is Burger Kitty.
I did not see those.
Budweiser is Bad Walrus.
Oh my gosh.
Bad Walrus threw me off the most because, like, I can see how it almost is Budweiser, but it doesn't scan right. So it took me a second. I was like, I know that logo, but I don't get... Oh, okay.
Those were cute.
Yeah. Was there a McDonald's in this?
I didn't catch it. But also, I may have totally missed it. But I like the implication that, like, they're just in, like, they talk about Japan, like, you know, they are just, like, off the coast of Japan or something. So, like, they're in the normal real world. And I guess they talk about World War II and, like, real world events in that way. So I guess the implication is that, like, Subway exists, but then they also have to have Dogway. Right? Like, I don't know if that's, I wonder if those are independent corporations that, you know, are cloning the original company, or if it's like...
Like Louisiana Fried Chicken.
What's that?
It's way better than KFC, but it's like another knockoff of like a bigger brand, but there are all these independent chicken shacks called Louisiana Fried Chicken.
Oh, there was also that bringing up like the brands. There was like the what was it? Like Fireball or Hero Bowl, like the, or the Red Bull. Yeah, and there was that moment where Alan was like, I'll take one of those, and they're like, it's not for humans. And he's like, I'll take one anyways. And he's like, oh, how could you tell? And he's like, because you smell like a human. He's like, ooh, wow, me? You caught me. And then he drank part of it. And then he's like, oh, yeah, not for humans. And like pours the rest out. And I was like, this is a big ol' hint. I didn't see it at the time. But now I'm like, oh, that little bitch. He was.
When I saw that, that's such a weird cut, too, because after he pours it out, the scene immediately changes. I was like, wow, what was the point of that scene? And that's how you know, like, this is an important thing that just happened.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, so it's going to come up later. Yeah. I did love him. He was great. He was very charismatic. I wanted to believe him, even though I knew. I was like, oh, he's evil, but all
right. Right, like at the point where it seemed like there were a couple of different points where it seemed like, okay, he's going to be really secretive or like not be forthcoming with information, but then he would just say everything. And I was like, okay, maybe you aren't bad.
Maybe
but then
he's so confident in his badness that he doesn't care if you know his plan.
Right. Well, I mean, he had his real secrets, you know, like he kept very close to his sleeve.
Yeah.
But I guess he like, yeah, it's that charisma of like saying just enough to get you to like think they're super honest when they're actually being very duplicitous with the things that actually matter.
Yes. Okay. So I didn't see the twist at all that he was going to be like, guess what? I'm a purebred. And
I
was like, what?
I'm a little confused by that whole thing.
Well, I remember in the beginning, I guess it was important. I didn't know why it was important, but sure. They're just like, yeah, if like a lion and a tiger end up together, the baby isn't a liger, it's a lion or a tiger. Like, you can't breed mixes. So I was like, how is this relevant? She doesn't need to know that. She just got here. But now I'm like, oh, so everyone is possibly like a half breed, as he called them later on. And so I was like, I guess that was important. And he's like the only one, or in a family of the only ones who just stayed within their own species.
That's what seems implausible to me, that like, that they would really be the only ones, you know, like that. does not seem, especially since it's, they implied that they were kind of in separate societies up until recently. It's like, would there really have been that much crossbreeding?
Well, 1,000 years ago, all those animals lived together in the same city. So I feel like in the very beginning, everyone was separate, but they started to migrate together. Mm. And then that's when the like crossover happened. But I was just, I wanted to make the parallel to a series that we don't talk about anymore because it's not anime number one. And number two, the author's bad now, but it had strong Death Eater vibes. That's all.
What are we talking about?
Harry Potter.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I never read it.
Oh, no, there definitely was.
It like was definitely just like the pure blood Death Eater shit.
I think
that was my instinct.
I do want to bring up Harry Potter by name. I don't want to dodge it. Like, I think that it, when Alan was bringing up that it's like, oh, it's the pureblood versus half-breed kind of thing, it felt like the kind of message that in the moment I'm like, oh yeah, this is giving a good message. It's saying that like, it's kind of this on your face, so obvious. It's so obvious that it's bad kind of racism. You know, it's like, it's KKK kind of racism to be believing in purebloods versus half-breeds. And the fact that that's kind of the core message of Harry Potter, that like, hey guys, racism is bad. And yet the author can still be, you know, like
the worst,
can still be the worst in ways, including racism, like including not, you know, like being so bad about actually having like diverse, the characters in the show, the characters in the book are not like, they're very stereotyped and token characters.
She named the one Asian girl Cho Chang.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that, yeah, that kind of left me a little bit uncomfortable that it's like in the last moment is like, oh yeah, this is actually about purebreeds versus half-breeds. And I was like, okay.
Didn't Chiro have that moment where he says like, how dare you call beastmen half-breeds? Something like that towards the end?
Yeah.
I forget his exact phrasing. But I thought that was almost a rejection of like the fake dichotomy that Alan set up, where like purebreeds have any superiority to claim over like the so-called half-breeds. They're all just beastmen. Like fundamentally, and no matter how they got there. That was like a cool, like subtle rejection of that entirely, which was kind of fun.
Yeah. And then there was one aspect of this whole fiasco, I guess, at the end that we didn't explore and I wanted to. And they were talking about like, yeah, some beast men want to become human, but that's their choice. And we didn't really get to explore or see that many characters besides Michiru that was like, I want to be human.
It was like three people. That's it. In all of Anima City.
And like some people did get turned into humans. So what happened to them? Like there was definitely some casualties in that big fight.
Yeah. But maybe they...
Are they just human now? Or did they get like covered in her blood?
Maybe Alan's... like the thing that happened to Michiru and Nazuna could have been like extrapolated and mass produced and given to them so that they like could choose to come back or something.
Mm-hmm. True.
Maybe.
A cure for the cure.
On the note of... A cure, and it just reminded me of how I was like, oh, this series kind of feels like X-Men with the like, you know, like vague oppression metaphors. And then when the mayor was like, oh yeah, I was in a concentration camp in World War II, I was like, oh, okay, we're going right there. Okay, I guess it is X-Men.
There was actually a period of X-Men where they had, was it Mutant Town, M-Town, something like that? They basically had Anima City for mutants in New York City, which was like where all the weirdo mutants lived and that kind of thing. I think BNA did a much better job in general.
All right. Well, do you have any other closing thoughts? Should we get into our final verdict?
I love it. That's all I have to
say. You like it, love it, gotta have it?
Stop. You ruined everything.
Gotta have it, like it, love it for me.
Both of you are getting dunked in the ocean.
Good luck.
I think I am going to leave it. Sorry, not leave it. that's not a choice. That's not a thing. Wait, what was the phrase I had? Wait, leave it, weave it, gotta, no.
Gotta
believe
it.
Are you joking me right now,
what was
Jeff?
It? What was it?
You wouldn't recommend this to people?
No, I'm not. Okay, sorry. I got distracted with confusing myself. I am going to love it. But yay! I think it's one of the low, it's like right above the line to me. Like I would kind of, if I was recommending this to people, I would be a little bit worried that it wasn't like the most captivating thing, you know? Like I think if they're the type of person who would be interested in trigger stuff, wholeheartedly recommend. But everyone else, I'd be kind of like, okay, check it out. But I would like not assume they're going to love it necessarily. So, but I think I still would recommend it. So yeah, I will give it a love it.
Yeah, I would recommend it. And it's pretty sure. Yes, it's one of the shows that makes it past my like insane criteria, I guess, that if something, I want something to be, have like female characters in the main cast, have them not overly sexualized, and like have them like actually have like a story. And this is one of the very few shows that makes that list. This and Little Witch Academia. So good job, Trigger. You've got two. But then the other shows are are quite the opposite.
I think it's interesting how the best, some of the best received trigger stuff has been the stuff that's kind of pushed fan service to the background. Like Kill la Kill, that's like, oh wow, trigger is amazing. And then you look, Little Witch Academia is like a highlight. This is a highlight. Promare is a highlight. And all of them kind of mostly skip a lot of the nonsense that was in Kill la Kill.
Yeah. Love that. Thank you, Trigger, for this one. Please don't do Darling in the Franxx again.
I forgot Darling in the Franxx was pretty recent. So
yeah,
maybe they haven't learned.
Yeah, please don't do that.
Well, Darling in the Franxx is a weird case because it wasn't fully a Trigger work. It was like Trigger X Cloverworks, right? And like, I forget the exact staff involvement. Like, I think it was like Imaishi was like a co-director or something. It's complicated. So I don't think it's, we can't blame everything. I'm driving the Franxx on Trigger.
It's too bad. I do it anyways. anyways, I'm glad we all loved it. Everyone, please go watch it. If you haven't, you listened to this whole thing, what are you doing?
They love the sound of my voice.
I guess that's true. They came for you.
Mm-hmm. On the note of Annie shaming people, let's recommend some things. I'll go first because I assume Annie needs to think about her recommendation.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to recommend a pair of things, actually. I'm going to recommend two gacha games. One is available in English and one is not available in English. But Sino Alice is a new in English gacha game from Yokotaro, the creator of the Nier series. And it is it's a game about sexy, how to describe them? They're like sexy versions of fairy tale girls that are also like extremely violent and dark and in ways that like are totally implausible. Like Sleeping Beauty just wants to sleep and wants to murder everyone who wakes her up and things like that. But the other son of my two-star system that I want to recommend is Twisted Wonderland, which is only available in Japanese, but it is a official Disney gacha game, the premise of which... So Sino Alice takes the protagonists of fairy tales and makes them evil and dark and gritty and nihilistic, whereas Twisted Wonderland is an official Disney product that takes the villain characters, and I guess it's like twisted versions of the villain characters. So it's not just... For example, it's not just Ursula. I think there's an Ursula character and also the two eels, I think, also are characters, but they're twisted into sexy, cute anime boys in basically Harry Potter-esque magical school. So it's taking the villain characters and making them twisted into these sweet, adorable anime boys. So I think it's an interesting dichotomy between these two series, or these two games that take a similar concept, and one of them takes the protagonists and makes them twisted and evil and dark. The other one takes the evil characters and makes them sweet, innocent, cute anime boys. So... They're both great.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know American Mickey's Alice? Have you heard of that at all?
It sounds really familiar. It was
like really popular in like, I guess, the year 2000, but it's kind of the American take on like the dark, twisted fairy tale babes thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sino Alice does a better job than American Mickey did, because that was just like, what if Alice in Wonderland was extremely goth?
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of in the same genre of a fairy tale remix.
Mm. I think the other note to add to Sino Alice is that Yokotaro is also linking the show notes to Yokotaro's interviews they did for the game coming out in English, and he just is such a troll to the interviewers. Like, one of his answers was just like, anime is the perfect medium. It moves, it has sound, you don't need anything else. Just anime. They were like, why did you decide to make this game about fairy tales? And he was like, well, because they're not in copyright, so they're free and it's cheap.
Yeah.
Love that. Very honest.
I just got a notification from Sino Alice saying that my AP has been refilled and Princess Kaguya says, punish me more. So...
I'm sick of you.
That sounds about right.
David, can you please recommend something?
So I've been having a hard time during the pandemic, but I've been playing this game called Blasphemous. It's on like PS4, Xbox, Steam, and Switch, I think. And it's a Metroidvania, like a run around a dungeon, Castlevania style game. But it's very difficult. And instead of like fighting vampires or that sort of thing, it's sort of like, what if the Catholic Church was all about punishment instead of salvation? So it's, you kind of wandered around this horrible alternate universe medieval Spain, killing people and getting killed in return. But it's really fun and really rewarding, and like the visual aesthetic is super good. And weirdly, it's comforting during, you know, like now times, because it's like, oh, I understand this apocalypse versus the one I'm having to live through right now. Annie, what do you have?
Okay, so I do have a real thing, but I do need to bring to your attention that Big Time Socialist is trending, because some crazy person running for Congress in Florida, surprise, surprise, tweeted, because AOC tweeted out like thanks K-pop stans because of like the whole, you know, political activism. And then this guy said last month at AOC worked with K-pop agents via the app TikTok to sabotage the president's rally. K-pop is foreign propaganda. Why was AOC conspiring with Koreans such as Jungkook, which he spelled his name wrong, and BTS, big time socialists, to undermine our president? TikTok is Chinese owned. And then he said Kim Jong-un knew. And like, so everyone's dunking on him and BTS or big time socialists is trending. And like, I really needed you to know that.
I feel like I just lost 3 years off of my life now that I know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then K-pop agents is also trending. I can't believe K-pop. I did not have that K-pop would become a political, like a political topic in 2020, but here it is. But anyways, I guess kind of branching off that, my recommendation is, I think I've briefly mentioned it on here, but my like fully recommending, if you're trying to learn Korean, Talk to Me in Korean is like a really good website for it. And it is a really good YouTube channel. And they have a podcast that is like bite-sized, like lessons that go along with their textbook lessons. And they provide their textbook lessons for free in like PDF form. So you can just like take the PDF, listen to the lesson and follow along with it. You can buy the workbook from them if you want, but you don't have to. And it's like, it's really nice and really fun. And they explain it in like a really easy to understand way. And I do wish there was a Japanese version too. But if you want to learn Korean, Talk to Me in Korean's great.
You got to get that sponsorship.
I should. Let me talk to them. Hyunwoo, can you sponsor us? Thank you.
when you were like, I wish there were a Japanese version of this thing, like my mind goes to a place where I'm like, I find it so much more enjoyable to buy Japanese textbooks than to actually read them or do anything for them. So there's so many of them like, oh, this typography is great. This like this book is really well-made book. I haven't actually done the work to read it or anything, but like they're fantastic. But yeah, actually doing the study is the hard part.
That's why I like Talk to Me in Korean, because it's I can just put the podcast on and like have the PDF up and like kind of follow along visually while listening to it. But I don't have to like, one, pay for a book and two, like open it.
Paying for a book. Mm. Fate worse than death.
I know. I do. I want to buy the workbook, though. I will support you, Talk to Me in Korean. I swear.
Well, on that note, if you want Annie to never talk to you in Korean and you want her to never mention big time socialists again, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If it's 5 stars, Annie will never mention BTS on the show ever again. And if it's or say if you do want her to mention BTS on the show again, you can also send feedback on this episode to loveitorweebit@gmail.com or to our Twitter handle @loveitorweebit. I am Jeff Lee Jeff on Twitter. Annie, where are you?
I'm at any other name.
And I am at Hermanos.
And is there anything else you want to plug or point people to find other things you've worked on?
Yeah, check out iamdavidbrothers.com. It's like a super lo-fi index of everything I've been doing and what I've been up to.
Cool. So
wait, can we say thank you to David for coming on the show?
Oh, I forgot to.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, David, for coming on. It was a great conversation.
Thanks for having me. It was a really good time.
Yeah, thanks for watching all of BNA in a week.
Yeah, I should say I never binge watch anything, but I love my friends so much that I watched 12 episodes of anime in like 4 days.
The power of friendship got you through.
It did.
And also, thank God, it was only 12 episodes and it was like an enjoyable show.
That's the real message of the 4th of July, right? Screw USA. Just go for BNA.
Wow.
Nice slogan, Jeff.
All right. On that note, bye.
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 And as we always say, I'd rather go naked than wear anime.
Also, 1 second, the sun is blinding me.
You shouldn't look directly at the sun. What are you doing?
No, it's coming in my window.
This is audio medium. We don't need your eyeballs. So.
I can't hear you. I took my headphones off. Shut up. Okay, but guys, I want to eat some of these snacks. What if they're poison?
Well, they came don't think they're poison. In a sealed box.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't know that because my mom accidentally gave the packages to my sister-in-law and she didn't notice it had my name on it, so she opened it, and so when I got it, it was open.
But are the candies in the box also just open? And
no.
Yeah, aren't they all sealed?
No, yeah.
Give one to someone you don't like too much, just to see.
I want to eat these little yuzu candies.
You should, but after the podcast, just in case it's poison.
I die mid-podcast.
That'd be very upsetting because we couldn't kick you off the call. We'd be stuck.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, so for the I did have one question. Mm-hmm. For the recommendations, does it have to be things to watch or just things in general?
Just things in general. Okay. I recommended grilled peanut butter and jelly as a concept once.
Interesting.
So,
yeah, it sounds crazy. And he has never even had a fucking Uncrustable.
Hang on, let me Google Uncrustable.
I'm sick of you guys.
Oh, the circle Pop-Tart things. Yeah.
You've never had, yeah, just, you've never had one?
No.
You guys.
It's not a normal thing to have.
Yes, it is. You haven't frozen?
I wasn't into jelly as a kid.
What?
Maybe that's a weird thing to say. I don't know. But Pop-Tarts were always the move.
Can't believe this. Bunch of elitists. Dude, Pop-Tarts.
I'm sorry we were too poor to afford your upper crust bread snacks.
Yeah, prepackaged bread snacks. We had to make our own Uncrustables.
I'm looking up the prices of these things.
If we wanted Uncrustables, our poor mothers would have to cut the crusts off themselves.
Listen,
this was a plot point in the show that Jackie didn't recognize bread that wasn't just crusts.
Yeah,
oh, that was so sad.
You, on the other hand, recognize bread that's only non crusts because you're so elite.
Yeah, because you get 10 of them for $5. That was unreasonable, really. Let's look at Pop-Tarts, shall we?
No, let's get the show started. We're an hour late.
No, shut up. 1 second. All right, so Pop-Tarts are cheaper. What about it?
Wow, starting off the show wrong.
I want to punch him in the face, and his entire Earth Day video last year was all about bragging about how many celebrities he had, but in a furry way, so.
I'm going to send this to him. And you don't hate him for any good reason other than you're both from the same general area.
Okay, we're from the same hometown. Apparently we went to high school together. Apparently he was at high school when I was in high school.
Sounds like someone's jealous.
That's a real reason, I think.
Okay, my hometown is famous for three things. Lil Dicky, the house where Bill Cosby did his deeds.
I don't like that wording at all.
His crimes.
Yes.
His abhorrent crimes. And the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. So those are all really terrible.
He's from there?
All three of those things. Yeah. Well, he was born in Israel, but then went to high school in a random Philadelphia suburb. So
four things. It's also known for the podcast Love It or Weave It.
True.
True. Oh, wait. Sorry. I realized I had an extra tab left open from before. And the thing that I was cackling about before we started recording was that I was Googling if, like, what the furry community thinks of Lil Dicky. And there is, like, a post on r/furry that's like, anyone have opinions about the Earth song by Lil Dicky? And it had one comment. That's it.
Aww.
It's sad. But
enough about him. Get over it.
Jeez.
We've got to move on. Well, maybe I'll agree with you. Maybe I won't. But now, can I do spoiler time?
No, let's do the questions.
Oh, shit. Okay.
She really wants to get to those spoilers.
Yeah.
I like talking about spoilers.
This is how she always is. And I have to cut out like 10 times of her saying, can we do spoilers?
Well, I like to talk about things that happen. That's why I watched the damn show.
Wait, Annie, why'd you text me help? What?
I can't hear her if she's talking.
Yeah, I can't hear
her
either.
Oh, her Zencaster's muted.
Oh, she said she's not in the call. So I think she's probably in Zencaster still. Wait, she can't hear us, right? Of course. I was going to try and talk to her. It says she's still in the call.
Yeah, it says she's on Skype still, too.
And there's like a weird state where you can like be in the conversation, but not the call. Mm. But I think, now it says she left.
Oh, maybe her internet cut out. Did she just text you help and that's it?
Yes. I was like, is her life in danger? Like, she can't say it or something?
Blink twice if we should call the police.
Okay, I think I'm adding her to the call. You gave it back. That scared me, just texting me help. Like, I was still in the mindset of, like, you can't say anything in front of your roommates or something.
No, that would have been bad. No, I tried to click on the chat, and I guess Skype was like, don't do that. And then it took me out of the call. So I'm just not going to touch anything ever again. And I'm sorry that I just sent you a text that said help. I'd also never heard of this series until right now. Sorry.
It's really good.
Yeah, it really is. The first season is like, what if Twitter was good for the culture? And it's amazing.
Oh. I'm curious to see how the second season holds up. Because I remember there was so much wild stuff about like, what if we let the people vote on everything? Oh no, the world's ending
because of that. I rewatched it last year and it's still solid, but you can't take any kind of political lesson from it at all.
Okay. Yeah, I think it tried to be really political and it's like, okay, I don't know.
Yeah. I also, I was going to say. Never mind.
This is unrelated
completely. No, I thought of it again.
Oh, okay, go.
Shut up.
I'd rather go naked than wear anime.
I'm sick of these. I don't want to hear any more of them.
They're one of the best parts.
No.
Wait, David, do you recognize that PETA slogan?
You'd rather go naked than wear fur or something like
yeah.
that? Yeah. Yeah.
I never heard it, but I found out I Googled. I wasn't sure if it was like a known thing or not.
What were you Googling to like find that?
I just searched PETA slogan.
So embarrassing.
But I don't think they have anything more iconic.
Yeah, I think at this point it's just a funny turn of phrase more than anything like officially associated with PETA.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know if this slogan work any better. Anime is not ours to eat, wear, experiment on, use for entertainment, or abuse in any other way.
It would be great if you read it in a fine print voice, like on a commercial.
Oh my god. I hate this.
Rage quit right now.
Yeah.
I am going to leave.
Did you see all of my horny Shiro fan art in the chat?
No.
No. If I open Skype, is it going to close on me again?
Maybe. But it's late. I need to go eat dinner.
Yeah. I probably should eat something too.
Okay, this last one's horrible.
Why are you being so fatphobic, Annie?
Jeff. Okay, the middle one. I see you, fan artist.